All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is Monday, October the 17th, 2022. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. A little bit rainy, a little overcast, but feels good. It's not cold. It's a beautiful day. So it is Monday. I'm off today. I thought I'd come in. I had to upload another podcast, and I thought I would just sit down and see if I could maybe get out a podcast this morning. I had a lot of struggles last week between scheduling and mental and whatever it was, but just had a lot of trouble, and I want to try to see if I can do a little bit better job this week. I should have no interruptions today because I am off. I'm just hanging out, and don't have a lot of stuff planned today. Got to do some stuff with my wife, some maintenance sort of stuff this week, catching up. We've had all the kids, and we had in-laws in town, so probably hit the grocery store and have my dad over for dinner tonight, probably hit a meeting later and, you know, just kind of hang out. Big day for football yesterday. My team, my team lost. Cowboys, it's bound to happen. Eagles are good. But enjoyed football, hung out, got up. I did go for a run the other day. I don't know. I think it was on Saturday I went for a run. So didn't run yesterday. Felt pretty lazy. Got to do something cool yesterday, though. My in-laws, like I said, are in town from Connecticut. They went back yesterday. They're home safe. I know everyone's concerned. They made it. but we went down to the Junction Breakwater Trail and just went for a walk and hung out. And it was my in-laws, my wife, my daughter, and our middle son, Sam. And just really had a great time. Just walking in the woods, man. The Junction Breakwater Trail, I don't know if you've ever come to Rehoboth or Delaware or Lewis, but if you ever do, man, go check out the trail systems that we have here. I shouldn't say systems, the trails that we have here in Rehoboth. They're just beautiful. And the Junction Breakwater Trail is special. And I don't know, we're kind of getting right into that fall sort of colors going on. I think I shared the other day that when I look out this front window here, it looks over like a parade area in this development. I mean, it's probably the size of it's probably a 50 by 100 yard patch of grass. It's probably about the size of a football field. And it's completely surrounded in red maples. And actually, this whole development is full of red maples. So I can see them. I'm looking out the window right now. They're starting to pop. So in the next couple weeks, the colors are really going to start taking off, and it's beautiful. And all the stress that I've kind of gone through this past week, it was nice to just kind of walk. The only downfall of the whole thing was that they'd kind of planned to leave around noon or maybe 1. So we were in a little bit of a rush. We could have probably walked out there for another couple hours and just taken pictures and just had fun. You know, my son Sam, if you have kids and if they're around 11, I don't know, 12, whatever, you know, you're always hoping to see some sign of something that they're interested in. Like I can pick 100 things for them to be interested in. But when you start to see a child of yours start to show interest in something, you know, one, you have to be careful that you don't bury them in all that shit that they showed interest in, right? Like, oh my God, you like this? Here, let me buy it. Let me get it. Let's get you going. And, you know, the other thing is that I sort of have to stay out of it because I don't want to ruin it, right? I don't want it to become sort of a thing. But during a walk, you know, my father-in-law brought his Nikon or whatever, Minolta, some sweet camera. And Sam really showed interest. And it was cool to see Jerry and my son kind of bonding through camera, through lensing, through, you know, photography. I'm a huge fan of photography. I'm a huge fan of nature. I do a lot of running, and I take so many damn pictures. I have a picture. I have a picture addiction. I take too many pictures, but that's sort of what happens, you know, when you're out doing something. And you know, sometimes I will say, oh, like if I don't do this, I'm not going to get the benefits from it. And it's not always the case. You know, I do enjoy running, and when I am out running, and I've said this several times, I believe if I'm not suffering at some point, I'm not living. And when I run, I suffer. You know, it's a grind. It hurts. It's painful. It's mental. The battles inside are taking place between stop and go and walk and run and, you know, whatever it is. It's just a constant, you know, I just don't start running and my mind's like, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's go for it. It's usually like, oh my God, you're going to be tired. You need to walk, whatever. But when that is over, there is humility that is created because, you know, self would rather walk. Self would rather sit on the couch. Self would rather watch TV. But humility and the God side of me, I think, would rather go out and do stuff that really, I know in the end, benefits me physically and mentally. And running is just one of them. But I also have to remember that just because I don't go for a run, that doesn't mean that there isn't levels below running that aren't beneficial. And yesterday was a great example because we got outside, we walked, and we talked, and it was just a fantastic, fantastic morning. And Jerry and was taking time with Sam to talk about photography, letting Sam use his camera. And it just, we kind of all, it was really funny. It was 6 of us, and we all sort of kind of paired up at one point. And like Jerry was walking with Sam, and I was with Teresa and Karen and Christine were walking, and it was a nice, beautiful time. And then we finally got to that bridge, and you know, the views and the colors and the water and the herrings. It was just an amazing, amazing morning.
Something real. You were asleep. I could feel you breathe. I still love how that made me feel. I am not much of anything. You will always be everything.
Freaking powerful, man. Morgan Wade. I am such a fan of that girl. She is such a great singer, such a great songwriter. Relatively new, I guess, on the scene. I guess she might have a couple albums, but just, oh, that voice and the pain and her story. Ugh, kills me. She's a song that sang The Night. Oh, just a big fan. Big fan, Morgan. But yeah, so the great weekend, you know, we also... It's funny, man. It's like these little things that can really upset or make your world a lot better. And one of these things was my in-laws coming into town. And you know, they always come into town, but they always get a hotel or they never want to stay. You know, the old house that we were in was a lot smaller. So our new house, which is, it's bigger. It's not, I wouldn't say it's huge, but it's definitely bigger. What's the point of buying a house if it's not bigger and to solve some of the issues that we were having before, which was just didn't have a lot of room. And so we get this bigger house and we have an extra bedroom. And the whole thing was that, you know, we were hoping one day that they would come down and be able to stay in the house and, you know, not have to pay for a hotel. And you know, so the only problem is we have cats. We have two cats. And my mother-in-law just doesn't like cats. You know, she's allergic. So my wife's been keeping the house super clean. Not that it's not clean, but, you know, like vacuuming, making sure the cats don't get into that room. And we had bought them all new bedding and stuff. And, you know, I'm like, let's not even open it until the day before. And when the day before, we'll wash it and get everything clean. And so, you know, the countdown was on and that was very stressful and just, you know, on top of just life. And so my wife and I, definitely my wife was stressed out. And, but they came down and they had an amazing time. They stayed at the house. No complaints. It's so funny. I mean, you can build a bigger house. You never seem to have enough room, right? And the room they stay in is kind of connected, not connected, but shares a wall with the living room and dining room and the living room. And, you know, they're like, all right, we're going to bed. And I'm like, all right, good night. And then I'm like, shit, can they hear the TV through the wall? I was all worried. And so I kept the TV down. It's just, it was crazy. But they didn't. They had an amazing time. Everything was a success. Karen didn't have allergic reactions to any cats. We sort of kept them out of their way. And it was just a fantastic weekend. You know, one of the things, I think that a lot of, I know one of the things we always do when people come in town is we always go out to dinner, right? We'll go out to dinner. And I don't like going out to dinner. I might have in the past because it was just something we did. I don't like going out to dinner. It's not a great experience for me, for us, and it hasn't gotten any better. And so my father-in-law's like, when we get down, we'll go out to dinner. And I go, you know, honestly, Jerry, I'd rather just cook. I'd rather cook you guys dinner. I can make better food. A lot of the times when we go out, we make the kids eat off the kids' menu because who the fuck wants to pay for some goddamn expensive bullshit for your child? So you make them eat off the kids' menu, which is shitty food. And I'd rather just cook. I you know, I'm not a chef. I'm not a professional, but I can, you know, I can whip together 6 or 7 meals. And so they came down. I cooked spaghetti. We had meatballs. We had, I made a meat sauce. I also made a sauce minus the meat, just a marinara sauce. Had my dad over. And, you know, my father-in-law was like, wow, you know, that was awesome. And for a little of the price, right, just as a fraction of what we would have spent at an Italian restaurant. And honestly, personally, all restaurants to me, they're really struggling. And, you know, I've shared before my buddy Matt, who was in the restaurant industry. He made restaurants. He was a chef. And he told me, man, 10 years ago, we're just turning into a country that is okay with mediocre. And, I mean, how many restaurants do I have to walk in where it says on the door, you know, please, you know, be patient, right? We don't have enough employees. We don't have enough this. It just says it right on the door. It's going to be a mediocre experience. So I'm like, that's insane, right? Insanity, going to different restaurants expecting different results. And the reality is it's the same mediocre experience. Sorry, if you're in the restaurant business, you probably would agree. But I'm like, listen, I'll cook. We had spaghetti one night. And then we actually went out and bought some steaks. Very crazy. Went over to, we have a place here, Fresh Market. Went in there. They had fillets for like 2 fillets for $25. I mean, we bought 4 fillets, 2 New Yorks, and in a restaurant, that would have probably easily have been $75, $153. That would have probably been a $400 dinner with all the people that ate and cooked up some amazing steaks. And my father-in-law was like in shock. He's like, man, that was awesome. Thank you for cooking. And I was like, I'd rather cook. You know, I can make better food, and at least I know what I'm eating and I know what the kids are eating. And it's, you know, we're together, right? We're not leaving with a financial resentment. So just a great weekend. Just blessed, blessed, blessed every day. And this is all 100% today because I am a sober, non-drug-taking, non-alcohol-drinking person. And the gifts that have come to me in my life just for the fact that I put down alcohol. Now, I have to remind myself that it's not that I just made this noble choice to put down alcohol. I was a fucking raging alcoholic. You know, I really didn't have a choice. Jail, institution, or death was my future. And, you know, it's not like I just maybe had one extra too many every once in a while and it was sort of a problem and I made a change. No, I was a mess. And I wasn't capable of being in any of these relationships, whether it's with my wife, or whether it's with my children, or whether it's with my in-laws. You know, I wasn't capable. You know, lately I've been struggling a little bit with the relationship with my oldest son, who's 17. If you have a 17-year-old, you probably know what I'm talking about, but it's just sort of uncomfortable for me. And I'm really struggling. And he's a great kid. That's the problem. I told him the other day, I said, I did such a great job of teaching you how to be independent and handle your own business and take care of yourself. You know, he does his own laundry. He does, you know, he gets up on his own. He works. He's a perfect kid, right? The problem is that he's not my little boy anymore. And him and I used to, you know, we used to be tight. And I, you know, I always give so much credit to David because the miracle that he showed me in my life, and he never even knew it, right? I've shared before about being adopted, and if you're adopted, I won't speak for you, but I know as a person that is adopted, it is an interesting experience. I mean, you're basically dropped off on the planet and issued new people, or some people pick you, right? I used to say, I'm a barcode. I'm a barcode, which is great. You know, listen, I love my parents. My parents are fantastic. See, my dad will be over tonight. Just fucking love them. But I love them as people that raised me and took care of me, which is really, is sometimes hard to find even in these days. You know, it's, as parents, sometimes we can struggle. And my parents never did. They were just amazing, amazing people. But, you know, you don't, and I guess this isn't a big deal unless you sort of are experiencing it, but you don't know where your nose came from, or you don't know where your mouth came from, or your hair, or your eyes. You don't, you know, I could, you know, when I was adopted in 1968, you know, the adoption agency, you know, you filled out the application, right? And the adoption agency, funny as it was back then, tried to match you up with kids that sort of looked like you. So my parents adopted me, their first son to be adopted was me. My mom had blonde hair and blue eyes. So they picked a blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy for them. My parents, you know, they wanted me to look like I came from my mom. And then they adopted a second child, my brother, and he had brown hair, brown eyes like my dad. And so as we grew up as a family, you wouldn't really on the outside think that we were adopted. In fact, my mom, you know, I miss old Jean. You know, she would come into the salon and I would do her hair. And her and I used to do a lot of selfies together because people would say all the time, oh my God, I see you. I see your mom. Or you and your mom look so much alike. Or I can see you and your mom, or your mom and you, whatever the situation was. But people would say, you guys are obviously son and mother, right? And her and I would look at each other and, you know, kind of wink, like we'd be like, absolutely. And we did look alike, but she wasn't my birth mother. But her and I always had this an unspoken agreement that was fine. Right. I didn't need to say I'm adopted. We just had fun playing along with it. But her and I always knew what the situation was. But when my son David was born, he was born and really a dark period of my life. I was struggling. I had come out of that sort of that 4-year period of, you know, I'd been sober for 4 years and then moved to Easton and picked up. We were in Easton for 4 years, and I would say probably maybe two of those years I was struggling with drinking, and we had finally made a move, decided to move back to the beach. And the other thing is that my wife and I had gotten pregnant a couple times and lost babies and, you know, whatever it is, but it didn't end up happening. And it became a very, it was a lot of stress on our marriage because, and if you've ever been in that, you know, if you're trying to have a child and it just isn't happening like you want, and you start to get on these schedules, you know, to have sex and, you know, all this shit, it's like people say, oh my God, that would be awesome. It wasn't for me. It was very stressful, but finally the miracle happened and my wife got pregnant with David. And, but I was, you know, I was struggling, man. I was struggling, and she left, you know, my drinking got to that place where she finally left, and, you know, I got to get sober again and finally have David back in my life after a year. And I remember I was at New York, PA on his birthday. I called him on his birthday from York, and it was, you know, it was a low point of my life. But, you know, my son from that point, he never saw me drink in that year. But I know from that point on, he's never seen me drink or drug. And that obviously 14 years ago. So, but he was the guy that made me sort of come around full circle in my life. You know, I could see, even though he looked so much like his mother, right? And she was a beautiful lady. But all I could see in his face was his mother. I'm like, where are my features? But as he's grown up, I can't see it. But, you know, I could see where my nose had gone, right? I don't know where it came from, but I knew where it went. And so David was really the first person that helped me kind of bring my life in full circle. And I didn't think it was a problem growing up. I was never the guy that cried, I'm adopted. My brother was a little different. He really felt if he had met his birth parents, his life would have improved. But I think it was just an excuse to get our parents off our backs because we smoked too much pot. Because it was usually, you know, the moment where this sort of subject would come up. But yeah, David was the guy that brought me in full circle. And he was, you know, because when I came out of that rehab and I started my journey on sobriety, it was just me and him. You know, my wife had left me. I had nobody. So it was me and him. And so me, for the first time, really trying to be sober, working with a new sponsor, and also trying to be a father. You know, it was just a big learning experience. And so, but what I've learned, at least for me, is that, you know, my kids are, and I say this to them all the time, you're just mini adults, right? You're just, the only difference is your size and experience. Because they have a lot of great ideas and a lot of great thoughts. And David and I would, you know, I would make some kind of stupid, irrational decision. And David at 5 or 6 or 7 would be like, you know, Daddy, maybe this. And I'd be like, yeah, man. And I like how in that Morgan Wade song where she talks about the white flag. And, you know, it's for me, it's just been one white flag after another because I always have what I think is right. And then am I available to listen to another person's ideas, and am I available to recognize that if it's a better idea that I'm willing to try that and get ego and pride out of the way. And having kids, man, you know, I say, you know, if you want to have the life that you had prior to kids and live it during while having kids, they just don't work. You know, at some point I had to really wave that white flag and give up the life that I used to live and recognize that the life with a child is a lot different. And from that point on, it's been, you know, him and I, and just such a good boy. And so today he's just so independent and doing his thing and being successful. Has a 17-year-old kid. He's working and he's got a girlfriend. He's got friends and they're doing things. But the funny thing is I start seeing, you know, my dad and me with him. You know, they just, Friday's like, yeah, we're going to try to go to homecoming. I'm like, did you buy a ticket? No, we're going to just see if we can get in. I'm like, well, are you going to go to dinner? Yeah, I think we're going to go out to dinner. And I go, well, here, let me give you some money. This is what my dad used to do. Take some money. And so I'm like, here, take some money, you know, have a nice time. And then he came home and he goes, yeah, we couldn't get into homecoming. And it, for a minute, it reminded me of some bullshit lie I used to tell my parents. Like, yeah, we're going to homecoming, where we weren't. We were probably going to go to the down to, you know, the river and drink a keg of beer. But, you know, I would lie and say, yeah, we're going to homecoming. And because I knew my parents inside would be super excited to hear that, right? And homecoming's a bad example. But we would be doing something that they would, you know, be excited to hear. Like, oh, I'm going to go work with some guys and study math. And they'd be like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Here, take some money, have dinner. When really I was going to go drink beer. So I have to remind myself that my first thought is, oh, I wonder if he's pulling some shit over my eyes. But the second thought is, you know, he's never done anything like that. He's always just been a great kid. And I can't start to think that way. And so I'm just, it's tough because when, you know, he's not all warm and fuzzy with me anymore. We don't have conversations like we used to. We don't laugh. Him and I don't really laugh anymore. Last night I had to go to the grocery store. I'm like, David, why don't you go to the grocery store with me? The whole time I was fucking annoyed. Like, he didn't really talk to me. And I did try to make small talk, and it'd be one-word answers. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? I'm like, this guy needs to move out. Get out. And that's me, man. If things don't go the way that I like him, I become arrogant, right? The fact of him not talking to me is an inconvenience. And honestly, I don't really know what we would talk about because our worlds are so different. Anytime I try to bring something up that I feel is sort of cool or relevant to him, it's not, right? And you can hear it in his tone. No. Like I'll find music. I'm like, check out this song. And he's like, oh, that's okay. I'm like, you don't love it? Fuck, you don't love it? Fuck you. And I get inside, I get crazy. And I need to, you know, not be that way. And so that's what I'm struggling with right now, is just trying to be in a kid's life who really is doing fantastic, right? I can't be mad that he has become this kid that really handles himself and really doesn't, for the most part, need me other than like a roof over his head and, you know, some food and stuff. Yeah. Never freaking gets any easier, it seems. Let's see. Let's maybe we can do a reading, get into some daily reflections. I am going to go to a meeting tonight. Pretty excited about that. Here we go. Daily reflections. Excuse me. A daily tune-up, October the 17th. All right, here we go. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. Huh, okay. Let me read that again. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into our activity, all of our activities. Okay, here we go. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, page 85. How do I maintain my spiritual condition? For me, it's quite simple. On a daily basis, I ask my higher power to grant me the gift of sobriety for that day. I have talked to many alcoholics who have gone back to drinking, and I always ask them, did you pray for sobriety the day you took your first drink? Not one of them said yes. As I practice step 10 and I try to keep my house in order on a daily basis, I have the knowledge that if I ask for daily reprieve, it will be granted. Yeah, that's awesome. I remember when I drank, praying about anything was not on the top of my list. You know, it's a, and for me, you know, I climbed my way up the ladder and I climbed my way back down the ladder before the drink. It wasn't like I was at the top of my recovery game and all of a sudden I decided to drink. No, that wasn't the case. I slowly chipped away back down the ladder to a point where I had disconnected myself from the program. And, you know, and I shared this several times. You know, I didn't like the way they counted the money. I didn't like the way they ran the meeting. You know, self started pointing out shit and then self separated me from the meeting. And I do identify self as the devil, Satan, the evil one, right? Or is it evil? I don't know. It is if it's like talking you out of going to a meeting. But that self-centered voice started talking to me and started, you know, chipping away at my foundation. You know, they don't collect the money right. They don't start the meeting on time. They don't collect the money at the right time. It was just these stupid little things. And eventually, and this sort of has happened recently with that Friday night meeting that I was going to in town, where it was just a little free-nilly for me. And the good thing is I found another meeting to replace it, and I'm really enjoying the new meetings that I'm going to now since we have moved. But, you know, that Friday night meeting, man, I didn't like the way the looseness of it. I felt like it was personalities over principles. It was a mess. And I was like, I'm not going back to that meeting. Did replace it, have a new meeting. I'm very excited. Different, complete different mindset than when I was in Easton. You know, in Easton, I was like, I don't even need these meetings. And next thing you know, that voice showed up and I was back at it. So anyway, I appreciate you letting me share. I hope everyone is having a great day, and I'll catch up with you later in the week. Peace.